unlike majority of law firm owners, you actually do have the benefit of having an undergrad in business. So you probably have a significantly higher business acumen than most law firm owners who did something else in undergrad, then they went to law school, then they practiced law somewhere else, and then they started their own law firm with little to no business understanding, which I find to be very common.
The nice thing about legal services is they are highly profitable things to sell, right? It's not like we're selling a widget and it cost us $5 to make it and we're selling it for $8 or $10, right? Like, there's really very little cost of goods. And so we have a lot of advantages as a law firm owner to be able to scale and make a lot of money. But yeah, you still need those basic business principles in order to be successful.
You are listening to the Grow Law Firm podcast, where each guest shares actionable, practical ideas with you on how to get more clients, expand your reach, and grow your law firm's revenue and profit. Here's your host, Sasha Burson.
Hi there. I have a small but really meaningful favor to ask you. You know, I watch At The Stats on our YouTube channel and Spotify channel, wherever most people listen and watch our podcast, and I see that over 80% of everybody who listens to it regularly is not a subscriber. I'm asking you to subscribe to this channel, and the reason for that is my mission and the mission of my team is to help as many small law firm owners to learn how to transform their law firms into better businesses, and so they in turn enjoy better lives. When you hit subscribe button, you tell these platforms that this is content worth listening, worth viewing, and they in turn will show it to many other small law firm owners and hopefully help me fulfill our mission of helping them create a better business and enjoy better lives. So would you please do me this favor? It would mean the world to me. And hit the subscribe button. And my promise to you is that I will continue to work hard at creating good content with practical ideas that help you and your teams grow better law firms. Thank you. Welcome to another great podcast of Grow Law Firm. I have an amazing and a really fun guest here with me today, Chris Guyman. Chris, you and I, we've been talking off camera or before we hit the record button for the last like 20 minutes. And I told you this was so different, and I'm having so much fun here. So folks, wherever you're listening to this, watching this podcast, reading this, prepare to get some serious golden nuggets of information, how to make great money while working a hell of a lot less than you're used to. Chris, welcome to the show.
Awesome. Thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah, let me add a little more to the introduction. So Chris is based in Logan, Utah, if I'm not mistaken, Northern Utah, beautiful, beautiful state that I first visited just a couple months ago for the first time. Chris is a husband, a father of three kids, a successful practicing. Can we still call you practicing attorney, although you work like 4-8 hours a week? I think it's still kind of like practicing attorney, right?
Yeah. A law firm owner is what I like.
Law firm owner, kind of a practicing attorney, who also happens to run a coaching group. He owns a coaching business, and I'm going to tell the story, and then you're going to add whatever details you want to add, because I love the story so much, how you started this coaching. So get this, Chris is a successful lawyer and a law firm owner, practices family law, makes really good money, and he's bored. You said you work like 15, 20 hours a week. The rest of the time you play video games.
Yes. Yeah. And I was playing like 20 hours of video games a week at work.
At work, and you're making great money.
Yeah.
So you are bored. So you're like, what do I do? So obviously you crack the code. You're making like $500,000 a year while working very few hours. You crack the code and you decide to, hey, why don't I teach other lawyers what you already know, what you already knew at the time. So you start this consulting group because you weren't challenged enough. And now you're helping. And this is the quote from, I believe, your LinkedIn or Facebook page, wherever I saw it. You help other law firm owners halve their workload, double their income, and prevent burnout.
Yeah.
So add whatever touches that you want on this and explain exactly how you do this. It's a fascinating story.
Yeah. No, you hit it right on the head. You know, it's funny. I always thought the goal was to do less. you know? And so I was always trying to get more and more efficient, buy back more and more of my time. And I kind of did get to that point where I was working way less than I should be, playing way more video games than I should be, and realized that that was not very fulfilling. You know, as fun as video games are, it doesn't bring that joy that I was looking for. And so I kind of had to do an audit on my life and say, okay, what's next for me? I can't just keep playing video games at work all day. And I realized how much I enjoyed helping other attorneys. I also realized how much need there was. Like, a lot of attorneys were getting burned out. We're working too many hours. We're not getting paid for the work that we're doing. And so as I started helping other attorneys, I kind of brought that joy that I was missing in my life. And so I said, you know what, I'm going to jump all the way in, and took a little bit of a pay cut to do that. I mean, I hired an attorney to do even more of the work so that I only had to work a couple hours a week, about 4 hours a week. So I took a pay cut to coach, but I love it. And so, and you know, now I make more with the law firm and the coaching business than I made before, but it was worth it. You know, even if I wasn't making more, helping other people avoid that burnout, do those things, is kind of what brings me joy. And that's why I do what I do.
That's such an amazing story. By the way, how long did it take for you, after you took the initial pay cut by hiring another attorney to do your cases, how long did it take for you to get back to your previous income level and then exceed that?
Yeah, it took a little over a year to get back to my previous income level. The next year, I kind of stayed even. I didn't focus very much on income generation for the entire second year of my coaching program. Really worked on improving the program and getting people results, specifically how quickly I could get people results. And so, and then the third year is when I said, you know what, it's time to treat this like a business and make some money on it. And then I made more in the first 2 months of the third year than I'd made the entire second year in my coaching business. And it's kind of just gone from there. So, and then the bigger it got, the more I was able to buy back my time and help the law firm grow as well. So now, I make almost as much in the law firm as I was making before and not doing any of the work. So, I'm about 3 years into the coaching program now, and obviously hitting a better stride every day.
So it fascinates me that out of the gate, you were focused on buying back your time as in actually working less. So you were very purposeful about that. Whilst most law firm owners, most lawyers you get to talk to, their minds are geared toward working hard, yeah, and expecting to work long hours, right? Yeah. So what got you to think about buying back your time or reducing the effective number of work hours out of the gate?
Yeah. You know, so my dad was an orthodontist, and he worked between 14 and 17 days a month. So he didn't work any Wednesdays, and most Fridays he didn't work.
You set the right example.
Yeah, exactly. So I remember growing up, like in elementary school, my dad pulled me out of school every single Wednesday at lunch, and we went on a horse ride together. And so being able to do that kind of stuff, you know, like that was so important to me. And so, when I was in law school, I actually got a job offer at a big law firm in San Antonio, kind of on the Riverwalk, you know, prestigious firm. And during the interview, they were saying like, hey, you can just kiss your family goodbye for 3 years. Like, you're going to work 60 to 80 hours a week. Like, you're going to get paid. It was like 120 grand a year, which was a lot at the time, but you're like, you're going to get paid good. You'll get bonuses. And then after 3 years, after you pay your dues, you can see your family again. And I had a 6-month-old baby. I was like, yeah, I'm not missing the first 3 years of my kid's life. So I turned that job offer down and decided I was going to figure it out myself. My gross pay that first year was $78,000, and my net pay was $14,000. So I made about 10% what I would have made if I had joined their firm. But I learned, that's when I decided, hey, I got to learn business. And so that's when I really hunkered down and started studying business and grew my business from there. So a lot of learning experiences along the way, but I knew from the very beginning that I'm not the type of person that wants to grind 60, 80 hours a week.
Oh, fascinating. So your dad was a major influencer who got you to
Absolutely.
Think that 14 to 17 days per month is about what you should be working. Did he give you any advice when you just started out?
No. I mean, he wanted me to get a job, to be honest. I did not do great in my undergrad. I got a better GPA in law school than I did high school or college. And so I think, and I'd started a real estate business before, like as a real estate agent before I went to law school. And I think I made like $3,000 the entire year. And so there was a lot of concerns between my dad and my wife too, of whether or not I had the gumption to make it happen. And so, yeah, he told me to get a job. So the exact opposite of what you think would happen.
That's awesome. So I just realized now how poor of an example I must have been setting for my kids for all these years. I definitely don't work 14 days a week, a month.
Yeah.
So it made me pause when you said that about your dad and just how good of an example he set for you, because there should be that proverbial work-life balance, which I think so many of us are sorely lacking, especially in the legal profession. And once you become a law firm owner, and most law firm owners that I got to meet, and I've met probably thousands over the years, thousands for sure, most work very long hours, very, very long hours. And statistically, we know that the average income for a law firm owner does not really justify those hours.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, no kidding.
Really?
You know? Yeah.
So it's fascinating. So when you teach, when you train, when you coach the students in your coaching group, what are the main tenets of what it is that you teach them that leads them to half their workload and double their income and avoid the burnout? Because truth be told, I've met a lot of, not a high percentage, but a fairly large percentage of law firm owners who are kind of like, I hate this shit.
Yeah. Yeah, I would dare say at least 50% of attorneys say that, that they hate what they do. And so it really starts, I mean, one of the things my dad did teach me was that if you're working the right amount of time, then you're able to do significantly better work than if you're working too much. And that's kind of the things we notice. As we work more and more hours, our productivity goes down. And so whether it's 14 days a month or 20 days a month, that's less important, as realizing that what I want to have happen is when you are working, that you are producing income. And as much jokes as I make about the time of my life when I was playing all those video games, one of the things I did learn is that if I'm not going to get paid, I'd rather be playing video games. Right. I significantly, video games, basketball, going on hikes with my family, going traveling, whatever. If I'm not getting paid, those are the things I'm going to do. It sure as heck isn't going to be drafting a motion to enforce or something. Right. Like, that's not what I do for fun. And so really the secret behind, I mean, getting to $500,000 a year of gross revenue, working 20 hours a week, 20, 25 hours a week. Really all you have to do is get paid for 4 hours a day. And every time I say that, if you haven't done the math, almost every attorney looks at me and says, I'm working way more than that. I'm billing more than that. I'm doing more than that. But the numbers just don't support that. As we were talking a little bit before, Sasha, like those Clio numbers show that the average attorney only collects about 2.1 hours a day for every 8 hours that they work. And I did this with just a coaching client just yesterday. She's working like 60 hours a week, and we ran the numbers, and she was collecting 2.5 hours a day. She's like, are you kidding? Like, I'm working this hard. But at the end of the day, if you take how much money you made that month divided by 40 hours a week, it almost always comes out to this like 2 to 2.5 number. So what I do is I get us really intentional with our scheduling. Specifically, I have everybody on the team, the attorneys, the paralegals, everybody who's working on the team, is we figure out how much money you want to make. But then we also just say, okay, for 4 hours a day, what activities are we going to do to earn money? And that money has to be prepaid money, if at all possible. Obviously, if you're a personal injury or contingency fees, there are some exceptions to that rule that you don't have the money in trust. But for most practice areas, you have money in trust before you've earned the money. And so I say, look, you got to work 4 hours a day for cases that have money in trust. What this does is, one, it makes it so you can almost not lose money on your employees. As long as you're billing enough for the employees, if they're billing 4 hours a day, they're billing way more money than you're paying them. So it's impossible to lose money on your employees. it also really gets people focused on why we're here. Like, this is a business. We're here to serve people. We're here to help people. We're lucky that as lawyers, we get to serve people as part of our business, but this is still a business. And so this isn't pro bono work. And if you want to do pro bono work, do that, but you get to pick when you're not getting paid. And so what'll often happen is I'll see the team or even the attorney sometimes, they'll reach out to clients and be like, hey, I have 4 hours to work on cases today and you don't have any money in trust. And I'm not allowed to work on your case during this time unless I have money in your trust. Can you put $500 in so that I can work on your case? A lot of people will say yes. Like, they want their attorneys working on their cases and moving things forward. So they'll pay the $500. And all of a sudden what happens is instead of collecting 2.1 hours a day, you collect 4 hours a day. And your collection rate will go from on average 68% to 98%. And so really all it takes to get to that for most attorneys is to get paid for the work that they're already doing. For only about 10% of attorneys, after we've implemented this 4 hour rule, 4 hours a day rule, do they need more leads? And so I don't even talk about leads with most attorneys until we've done this first. And then only after this, if you come to me and say, hey, I don't have enough work to work on my cases 4 hours a day, only then do we focus on leads.
It's fascinating. And this comes from a marketing guy, right? I want to mention that all of your cases come from word of mouth and your Google business profile.
Yes.
You don't advertise. You do not have an advertising budget.
Correct. Yeah, I did BNI, that networking group, for the first 5 years of my firm to kind of help get the word of mouth out. But I think I've spent less than $1,000 on local services ads, whatever, my entire career. I did it for like a month and then decided I didn't want to anymore. So yeah, I don't advertise.
Yeah, it's crazy. Something that I should have mentioned is that unlike majority of law firm owners, you actually do have the benefit of having an undergrad in business.
Yes.
So you probably have a significantly higher business acumen than most law firm owners who did something else in undergrad. Then they went to law school, then they practiced law somewhere else, and then they started their own law firm with little to no business understanding, which
yeah.
I find to be very common.
Yeah, I agree. What I thought was common sense, because I mean, I grew up, my dad was a business owner. My in-laws were business owners. I did a business undergrad. So what I thought was common sense is not for most lawyers. We weren't taught any of these things in law school. Law school failed us when it came to teaching you how to run your own firm. If you're working for another firm, then what you learned in law school is what it is. If you're doing your own thing, then yeah, you're severely disadvantaged if the only thing you have is what you learned in law school.
Yeah, it's really interesting. The barrier to starting a business in our great nation is non-existent.
Yeah.
But it's kind of like sink or swim, and most are just treading water.
Yeah.
Because of that. Like, you
Absolutely.
Do not have to have any understanding of business to go and register a business. That's mm-hmm. how I was with my first business in 2001. I started
yeah.
first brick and mortar business, and it was a struggle because very, very poor understanding of business. Right.
Absolutely.
And it's not common sense. Like, business is not truly common sense. You really have to understand business.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So,
I wholeheartedly agree.
Yeah. So you're teaching some almost like basic economics in business and very simple tactics. How to make the work that you already put in profitable, or at least revenue generating, whereas a lot of it usually just goes out the window. It doesn't get paid for.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, the nice thing about legal services is they are highly profitable things to sell, right? It's not like we're selling a widget and it cost us $5 to make it and we're selling it for $8 or $10, right? Like, there's really very little cost of goods. And so we have a lot of advantages as a law firm owner to be able to scale and make a lot of money. But yeah, you still need those basic business principles in order to be successful. If not, you'll get stuck. I think the average attorney makes less than six figures. So it's not nearly as much money as you'd think, considering we sell services at $200 to $400 an hour.
Yeah, I think the median income in 22, which was the last time I looked at Bureau of Labor and Statistics data, I think it was about 134,000, mm-hmm. so somewhere in that neighborhood. But I think there are some high earners.
Yes.
That really skewed that data up, like
yep.
considerably. So, and I think for, and I forget where I saw that data, for a law firm owner, the average income is something like 211,000. Mm-hmm. I do not know how accurate that data is. And yeah. My assumption is that a typical law firm owner does not work 4 to 8 hours a week, does not work 15, 20 hours a week, does not work 40 hours a week. It's significantly more than that. And then again, whenever I think like, okay, so you work 60 hours a week, so it's having a job and a half. So you take that 211,000 and you divide it by 1.5. Yeah. And that's your full-time salary. And then you have a second job. Yep. It just happens to be in the same office doing the same thing. And now you're making that 140,000, but you happen to have that second job. So you end up making 211.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. You know?
So I find that, and it's interesting. So your dad, I don't know if he is still an orthodontist or not, but is he?
He sold the practice to my cousin. So it's still Guymon Orthodontics, but he... and then he was the president of the American Association of Orthodontists. He just retired in April. So now I tease him that he's unemployed, but cool. he's truly retired at a young age.
That's awesome. So I often compare dentists, orthodontists, whoever's in that business, to law firm owners. I know a lot of dentists, and I know way more law firm owners.
Yes.
Intelligence level, arguably, is very, very similar. It takes a lot of brains to pass bar. Yes. It takes a lot of brains to become a dentist. Absolutely. I think to become a dentist, it takes one extra year. So it's just, but the difference over 10-year period after you get out of law school versus getting out of dental school is very different.
Yeah.
Most dentists are actually very successful. Very successful. It's incredibly easy to sell a dental practice. Incredibly easy.
Absolutely.
Banks will line up to finance the buyer of your business.
Yep.
They will pay you 100% of your last year's revenue as long as it was not declining, sometimes more than 100% of your revenue.
Yeah.
Selling a small law firm doesn't happen usually, actually.
It's pretty tough, yeah.
It's pretty tough. Like, nobody wants to buy it. What am I buying? Your desk, your computer, your books, chair? So, but the amount of effort that goes into building a dental business versus a law firm ain't different. One thing and the other thing takes a lot of effort, but the outcome is incredibly different. Incredibly different. But what I found, so I sold my first business very successfully. And after that, I did some consulting for small business owners. And I consulted quite a few dentists. And what I found was, and there were some lawyers there as well. What I found was that in the dental industry, there were a lot of business consultants who entered into that industry 30 years ago. Mm-hmm. They had the help of consultants long, long, long before lawyers would even consider hiring somebody with business acumen to help them grow their business.
Yeah. Yeah, my dad had a business consultant. I remember 20 years ago, he had a business consultant come and stay at our house and come eat dinner at our house, but use the help him with his practice. So he had that advantage that a lot of attorneys still don't understand the need for.
Well, half your workload, double your income, avoid burnout. Yeah. That's a lot of benefits right there.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, my dad's, the braces that they sell is about the same cost as what we attorneys sell services for, $5,000-$6,000. They have to pay for the braces and all those other things. Like there's a lot, their overhead's a lot higher than ours. So really our revenue should be the same, if not better than what that average dentist or orthodontist is making. So we should be making $300,000 a year working 14 days a month or more if you want to.
But most don't. It's interesting. So a little side story, one of the most successful business owners who I met, his name is Dr. Burleson. He is an orthodontist, or he was an orthodontist many years ago. I met him at a marketing conference here in Chicago in 2012.
Yeah.
And have you heard that name?
I haven't, no.
Fascinating story. I think everyone should hear it because like how differently he approached the business. So when he was in dental school, he decided that he didn't really want to be a dentist. But he's already in the dental school, so he's like, was like really thinking about how to grow a business rather than be a dentist. So with that thought, he graduates from dental school, starts working for somebody else. He decides that he wants to be an orthodontist. He doesn't want to do fillings. He doesn't want to do crowns. He wants the easier side of that business, which is... So he starts working as an orthodontist, and he is looking around, and he is like, who has a very successful business in this industry? And he finds that everybody is the same. It's a superstar model. There's usually one person at the helm, which is very similar to law firms, and a few support people, and that's how most of them operate. Sometimes you see a partnership. There are two dentists, but he's like, I looked at them, and it seemed like they were there for convenience more than partnership. So like, if one takes a vacation, the business doesn't stop.
Right.
Right? And they would share the cost of the office and advertising, et cetera. But everybody did the same thing. Nobody had a large business. And what you also noticed was that everybody advertised the same way. Braces, $500 off.
Yeah.
You know, back to school special, $500 off. Then Invisalign showed up and was like $500 off of Invisalign. He was like, everybody's doing the same thing. Nobody's making great money. Everyone's doing okay. So he decides to go on his own. But before he does that, he's like, I need to really understand the business of it and try to figure out how to go big. So he started studying marketing because he was like, marketing is the key to build a sellable, large business here. So what he did was he started researching patients, how patients buy. And he's like, the economic buyer is not the kid, obviously. And it's not the dad. It's the mom.
Yep.
Everybody's promoting the same thing to the moms. And he's like, something is missing there. I wonder how moms actually start the buying journey. So he learns these two key terms. He's like, the buying journey versus the sales cycle.
Yeah.
He's like, the buying journey starts significantly before the sales cycle begins. For those of you who are not familiar with the term. So a sales cycle begins from the time client or patient calls you and they're like, hey, I have a problem, right? That's the beginning of the sales cycle. The buying journey starts with your potential client, prospective client or patient, thinking, I might have a problem.
Yeah.
So what he figured out through numerous conversations with moms is that sometime about 11 and a half months before they call his office, almost a full year, they're standing on the sidelines of a basketball game or soccer game or football game. And one mom goes to the other mom, hey, we got Timmy braces. And that mom was like, oh, where'd you go? How much did it cost? And then she goes home, and that night she goes to her husband. Hey, Susan just told me, and the husband is like, we don't need that. And she goes like, well, we don't. And so she goes online, and she starts researching braces. But she's 11 and a half months out from making the phone call.
Yeah.
So what he brilliantly came up with, he was like, instead of promoting $500 off of Invisalign or braces, back to school specials, he created a book, everything about braces. And the book was written with pictures for kids, moms, and dads. For dads, he talked about the financial side.
Yeah.
For moms, he talked about the kids' future. And for kids, he talked about how it's actually cool to have braces. And it's awesome to grow up with straight teeth, et cetera, et cetera. And that book was beautifully illustrated. And so while everybody was promoting $500 off of braces, he started promoting the book online and everywhere else. Yeah. And so he would send those moms that book absolutely free of charge. Wouldn't even charge them for shipping. And then he would follow up with them through automated emails with just like a little nuggets of information about braces. So when they were ready to call an orthodontist and schedule that appointment 11 and a half months later, who'd they call? They called Burleson. How much did he sell that business for? I don't know, but he had 20 orthodontists working for him at the time of sailing. And I assume that at least each one of those orthodontists was bringing in $500,000 in gross revenue, probably significantly more than that, making it a $10 million business with 20% profit margin. And he sold it to a huge dental chain.
Yeah.
I bet he walked away with $20, $25 million.
Yeah, absolutely.
And the same approach can be applied to law firms. I loved how you were so, you had such intent on working fewer hours and producing strong results for those few hours. Love it. It's great intent.
Yeah, that's an awesome story. I hadn't heard that one before, but that's a great way of kind of summarizing everything we talked about today of turning this into a business. And, you know, to make decent money, I'm talking $500,000 a year kind of thing. Really, it's some basic business principles. To get past that, you know, like you said, 10, 20, 30 million, Obviously marketing, those types of things are so critical, and solving bigger and better problems is how we tackle about that. So when you're saying like what, you know, talking to what the mom wants, and even though you're selling braces in that situation, like you're really selling the kid's future to the mother, yeah. Right? If you start thinking of your law firm that same way, like I'm not in the business of selling divorce, right? I'm in the business of selling what life after divorce looks like. And specifically how to establish a good co-parenting relationship for people who are already getting divorced. Once I understood that, specifically that co-parenting thing, and I simplified my business to just focus on co-parenting, I was able to do less work. I was able to get better results, which meant I could deliver it at way less money than what other people were charging while still making more per hour. Which allows me the lifestyle that I'm looking for. But it all came down to
you got to explain that principle, because most people just heard you say that and they were like, WTF is he talking about?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Wait, you're charging less, but you're making more per hour? That makes no sense.
So how I do that is I charge a flat fee. So I figured out the average case in Utah, and there's a statistic out there that says the average case in Utah is $9,000 each. $18,000 total. And they take between 9 and 11 months on average. So when I sat down, I was like, okay, well, how are cases in Utah getting resolved? And Utah, we're a mandatory mediation state. So every divorce case has to go to mediation, and 95% of cases settle at or before the first mediation. So like, well, why are we doing all this extra stuff before mediation if 95% of the cases are going to settle at mediation? And so I just said, well, for the mandatory work that I have to do through mediation, I'm going to do $5,000, almost half of what people are charging. But I'm not going to do anything before mediation that I don't absolutely have to do, which is pretty much the financial declaration. That's the only thing I have to do before mediation. So I cut 80% of the work out and went straight to mediation, which means it takes usually about 3 months to get everybody's calendars and stuff put together. And you still have to serve them the petition, and they have 21 days to respond and that kind of stuff, right? So, but on average, it takes about 3 months. But from the time I file my petition to the time we go to mediation, 95% of my cases settle at that mediation. So 95% of my cases settle for $5,000, and they take 3 months. And the clients are stoked because they didn't have 9 months to fight about stupid stuff. They actually seem to get along a lot better. I've found a direct correlation between how quickly a divorce happens and how good of co-parents they are later. So you know, sometimes the people who hear me say it, it's the fastest, best, and most affordable solution. And a lot of business people say you can't have all three. But in this situation, you kind of can. It really is better because they are better co-parents. It costs half as much money, and it took a third as long. Well, once you start doing that, word gets out, right? That's why my entire business is word of mouth, is when people find out you have the fastest, best, and most affordable solution, they want to hire you, which made it really easy to make profit. But the backside that you and I were talking about before is because I cut all of the extra work out, I'm not doing temporary orders, I'm not doing depositions, I'm not doing all of those types of things. I cut my workload down. And on average, I only spend about 9 hours for each case. And so the average attorney here in Utah, where I'm at, bills between $200 and $250 an hour. Well, I, on average, collect $555 an hour per case. So my clients are paying half as much money. I'm making twice as much money, and they're getting faster, better results. That's really the secret of business. And the cool thing about the law, I think the law has more opportunities in this industry than almost anything else, is that there's a lot of low-hanging fruit. Because we've been billing by the hour for so long, the law is incredibly inefficient. And so if you're willing to spend a little bit of time thinking about the pain points that your clients have and then solving those instead of just doing the same thing every other attorney's doing, you can make a ton of money in way less time without being a business expert. Like nothing I did was fancy or special. It was just the very basics being applied consistently over time.
I got to ask, how much do your competitors hate you?
A lot. I hired an attorney from another law firm, and he was telling me how in their office meetings, they would be like, how does Chris have so many Google reviews? Like I was one person, they had eight. They're like, we have eight of us plus our entire team asking for Google reviews. Why does Chris have three times as many as we do? And they would drive them crazy that this punk redhead who is posting pictures in Disneyland every other month, how in the world is he making more money than we are? But yeah, it really is just these basic things over and over again.
Yeah, I think looking at things through the first principles approach, right? Like breaking down the problem.
Yeah.
And figuring out like fundamentally what's important to the client here. Right. And you just solved that riddle while everyone else is doing it the same way that everyone has done it for decades and decades.
Right.
Because that's how it's done. You just found a different solution. So they're spending almost half with you than they would with your competitor.
Yeah.
They're getting it done in about a third of the time. So 3 months, give or take, versus 9 months.
Yeah.
With a lot less agitation because your law firm is called the Conflict Center Resolution, right?
Yeah, Conflict Resolution Center, yeah.
Conflict Resolution Center.
Yeah.
So fascinating. I got to ask, so you're still a pretty young guy. You've built a lot, right? Very successful.
Yeah.
What's in the future? Like, where are you taking all of this?
You know, right now, my sole focus is just helping as many attorneys do the same thing as I've done. We've done this same thing for criminal defense attorneys, family law attorneys, immigration attorneys, personal injury attorneys, all across the country. And that's really been my focus is just trying to, I mean, nothing makes me happier than when I get a testimonial or a referral back from somebody and they say, hey, I just hit that 10,000 a week and I'm working 4 days a week. So that's really my primary focus right now is coaching people and helping them take that next step and build that work-life balance. I say my goal right now is to help attorneys create an abundance of time, money, and energy so that they can do what they love. And that's really it right now. Maybe in the future I'll do something else, but I really love what I'm doing.
That's awesome. Probably one of the last questions is, I've had other successful attorneys on this podcast, and I'm a very ambitious person.
Yeah.
By nature, by nurture, I'm just built like nothing is ever enough, which is a blessing and a curse at the same time. So I'm always striving for better quality, faster speed, better outcome.
Yeah.
And you have done the same thing for your clients.
Absolutely.
I've had very successful people on this podcast who would go like, Sasha, why you always focus on the money? And like, do you hear that from some of your potential clients, from your existing clients? And how do you address that?
Yeah, I do. I hear that quite a bit. And, you know, there's this love of money is the root of all evil and that type of stuff. But then there's times like I try to remind people like money gives a lot of options to us. Oh, my screens on my other monitors went dark. So now all of a sudden my face is blue. But yeah, the money gives us so many options, right? Like I bought a relatively new house and the first year the furnace went out, the second year the AC unit went out. The third year, my son, who was 6 weeks old, went to Primary Children's Hospital and we got hit with a huge bill. So every single year in December, my lowest income producing month of the year, for the first 4 years that I was in that home, we got hit with an $8,000 to $10,000 bill, which you would think would cripple somebody, right? Like I already am making less money that month than I normally do. I've got Christmas, I've got taking time off, I'm doing all these things, and I get tagged with this $10,000 bill. In fact, the last one was only $5,000. I was like, hey, babe, it's only $5,000. And she laughed at me like only and $5,000 can't be put together. But that's what money allows me to do, right? At the end of the day, I was bugged. Like, do I want to replace a 5-year-old furnace in my home because the person who bought the house before me didn't fill out the warranty? No, I don't want to, but I can, you know? And we had a family in the neighborhood that couldn't afford Christmas for their kids. And we just bought the kids' presents. And I do a bunch of work at the local abuse shelter and we've sponsored one of their homes for the last couple of years. And, money allows us to do a lot of awesome things, you know? And so that's one of the reasons I do that is I want to be able to help other people. I want to be able to meet my needs when crazy stuff comes up that you could never anticipate. And the more that I have, the more impact I can do, you know? And so, now, I don't want to do it at the cost of time with my family. And so could I be making $10, $20 million a year right now? Probably. If I devoted 16 hours a day and done what Alex Hormozi did, maybe I'd be making a ton more money. But that's not worth it to me. So I'm just a big believer in creating that abundance of time, money, and energy, but then always pushing yourself to improve on all three. So make more money, have more time, have more energy. Constantly be trying to improve, because if you're not getting better, you're getting worse. But don't do it at the cost of one or the other. If you're balancing those three things, you'll find your life becomes more and more fulfilled. And you also, you don't get stuck in the rut of just wanting the bigger sports car, you know. Not to say you can't have sports cars and those types of things. My wife's teasing me because I want to buy a new Mustang right now. But you can do those things. But as long as you have a balance of that time, money, and energy, I think you'll find that fulfillment that you're looking for.
Yeah, that's an awesome answer. To that, I would like to add, which is something that I often tell people, is that in business, money is the same scorecard as it is in sports.
Yeah.
Are you winning? Are you standing still? Are you losing?
Yeah.
That's how you measure it. And if you become comfortable, it's a very, very easy way to motivate yourself. Every year, I push myself to at least double my charitable giving.
Yeah.
Every single year.
Awesome.
I am well over 10% of my net income year to date. We're almost in the middle of 2024. I'm way over 10% of my net income going to charitable causes.
Yeah.
It's a great motivating factor. Terrific.
Yep.
And I'm not 100% comfortable in life, but I still continue to do it and expand my charitable giving every single year. I think it's a great way to make yourself motivated for making more money, because you kind of like start out the year and you're thinking, I owe these charities this much money this year.
Yeah.
And I'm going to work to deliver because I made that commitment to those charities. They don't know it, but I know that I made that commitment. So I am going to work to deliver on my commitment to those charities, although they don't know about it yet.
Yep.
So I think that those are... And the reason why I bring this up, I think a lot of people also, once they get to certain comfort level with their income, they kind of stagnate because they're like, oh, this is what I wanted, and I'm here, and now I do not want to go another level up. And what you said, like, if you're not growing, you're declining. I think that's what you said. I may have paraphrased a little bit.
Exactly.
But it's just that, you know, don't stagnate, keep growing. So I love this conversation. This was so much fun. I see great things for you in the future. I will follow you. We'll connect on social. And thank you so much for sharing all this wisdom.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me. This was a lot of fun. So thank you.
Thanks for listening to the Grow Law Firm podcast. If you liked the ideas shared in this episode, help a fellow lawyer out by sharing a link to the episode. This episode is powered by the team of experts in client attraction, growlawfirm.com. Do you want a complimentary growth plan for your law firm? Request it at growlawfirm.com/blueprint.